Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from a wet Ocala, Florida.
And I am Coach Jen, hanging out here in the distractingly beautiful Horse Radio Network studios overlooking the paddock. And you're listening to the Horses in the Morning show on Horse Radio Network for August 27th, 2012, episode 475. This episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha. Good morning, Horse World.
Yep, it's Monday.
All right, let's take it from the top again.
Well, good morning, everybody. Hey, Jamie is out this morning. She's on her way back from visiting relatives in California today. She'll be back on Wednesday. We're back here live. And I just wanted to say that we just have a little bit of rain here from Isaac. It seems to have gone further off into the Gulf than they originally thought. So we weren't sure whether we'd even have a show on here this morning. One of the disadvantages, Jennifer, when you live in a place that has a lot of big, huge live oak trees over power lines. But so far, it's just been rain. Yeah, not too bad.
And actually, very disappointing rain because, you know, we get a lot of rain here this time of year. And sometimes we'll get 3 inches in a matter of a few hours. It just comes down so hard you can't see 3 feet in front of your face. And, oh, hurricane, lots of rain. Yeah, drizzle.
Really, it's coming later. We still have some rain to get here yet today, so you have that to look forward to yet. But my friend Michelle over there at Wright Lead Equestrian Center, who I know is probably listening this morning in Louisiana, Baton Rouge, sent me a message on Friday and said, ah, ha, 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 aren't you glad you moved to Florida? Hurricane coming. Well, Michelle, now I can say, ha, 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 aren't you glad you live in Louisiana? Hurricane coming, because now it's heading your direction. So be careful what kind of emails you send out, because you know what can happen. So, yeah, it looks like, and it's still a tropical storm, so it hasn't really, it's a huge tropical storm, but it hasn't formed into a hurricane yet. So I don't think it's going to be, I don't think we're going to be flooding downtown New Orleans with this one.
No. Isaac is a little bit ADD. He's kind of wandering all around out there in the Gulf, not real organized, can't focus on anything.
Yep. Sort of, it should have been named Glenn. That sort of sounds like my life right there. Wandering around and can't focus on anything. That's kind of describes it. Yeah. Well, today we have some fun stuff planned for you. We're going to be announcing today what kind of cool prize we have for Really Bad Ads this Friday. And we're going to have the lady on who is providing that prize. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. And then also, at the 9:30 hour, horsenation.com, it's not Leslie this week. She's sending one of her writers in to talk to us about a story she wrote. And we're going to go back in history a little bit to a kind of quirky story. So Lorraine Jackson's going to be joining us for that. And then also we're going to be talking photography and children a little, and horses, all three of those, a little bit later on in the show as well. So we have a lot planned for you today. And Jennifer, thank you for joining me this morning. It's kind of boring to sit here and talk to yourself the whole time.
Oh, I don't think you'd be bored talking to yourself all morning, but the audience would be.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. You're in a mood this morning. Well, I wanted to say we also did a poll over the weekend, and I have the results of the poll here. We asked, how do you listen to Horse Radio Network podcasts? Pick the one you do most often, and the votes are in. The options were, and here we go, on the computer at work, we had 15%. Now, I think that's actually higher, and people won't admit it. On the computer at home, we have 23% listen on the computer at home. On your iPod or music player, we have 46% listen that way. And on your smartphone, only 15%. So that's how that poll came out. I don't know how you listen, but I'm sure it's one of those options. And we're going to continue to do those polls and keep putting
them in there to get some interesting information from it. Remind people, though, don't just comment. You have to hit the button and vote. Because I keep getting people on Horse Tip Daily. My Horse Tip Daily listeners don't follow directions very well. That's why they have to keep listening to tips. They just comment on the post. No, that skews the statistic. You got to go vote.
That's funny. They don't listen very well. Well, let's do our daily winnies here.
My daily winnie goes to the unofficial volunteer recruiter for the city of Ocala, Florida, Glenn's brother, Wayne. Yes, that's the same Wayne of Easy Signs Online fame. Today is his birthday, and he's the reason we live here.
Happy birthday, Wayne. I will say he's the younger brother, so he rubs that in all the time. My daily winnie goes out to two horses today, Golden Ticket and Alpha. And you know what? There was this little race over the weekend called the Travers, and I'm just going to let you listen to it.
A great rider here at Saratoga as well gets aboard.
They are off! And Golden Ticket breaking on top, and Spite City is right there with him. Alpha forwardly placed, and Steel Case is right there in the vanguard. And neck and neck, not far behind, he's fifth on the outside. Farther back, it's Donius is on the outside, racing in sixth. Street Life is seventh, 5-16, now racing eighth to the inside. And then it is Adigan, followed by Liaison and Fast Falcon at the back of the pack. So it's Spite City who's going to be the pacemaker here. Spite City through a quarter in 23 2/5 seconds. Steel Case sitting back, hard held while running along in second. Ramon Dominguez has a good hold there of Alpha, who's in the clear on the outside as they make the turn into the backstretch run. Golden Ticket races fourth on the rail, neck and neck racing in fifth. And then it's Nonios who's sixth. He's about half a dozen lengths from the lead. 5-16 is seventh. Adigan is eighth on the outside. Appears to be moving comfortably at this point. He's about 8 or 9 from the lead. At the back of the pack, Street Life Liaison and Fast Falcon. The half was up in 48 seconds flat. Legitimate pace. The leader is Spite City. Right there glued to him, Steel Case. So a pair of long shots up front here as the field approaches the half-mile pole. And the favorite, Alpha, third on the outside of Golden Ticket racing in fourth. Neck and neck now. He's asked to pick it up as the field enters the far turn. 3/4 and 1/12 and 3. Around the far turn. Steel Case making a move for the lead. So too Alpha on the outside as Spite City continues to fend them off. Neck and neck on the outside now up to be fourth. Followed down toward the rail by Golden Ticket. Stretch running Adigan and then Nonios. Then Liaison as the field turns for home. And Alpha comes up on the far outside charging after that lead. And down on the inside it's Golden Ticket. Golden Ticket in with a huge upset chance here with one furlong to go. Alpha is a full-out second on the outside. Fast Falcon coming on. Can Alpha catch Golden Ticket? Golden Ticket, Alpha, Fast Falcon on the outside, and Adigan. And here's the wire. It is. Oh, it's too close to call. Did Alpha get that nose on the wire just ahead of Golden Ticket? Oh, it was desperately close. Fast Falcon coming on late there with Adigan. It may have been Alpha, but if it was, it wasn't by much.
And it was too close to call because you couldn't call it. It was a dead heat, first time in this race in 143 years. Jennifer, I don't know that there's a whole lot of dead heats that happen every year, are there? There's just not a lot of dead heats.
It's a pretty rare occurrence because when you think about it.
Yeah, no, so what that...
You know,
I guess what that means is both horses win because when you saw the photo finish picture, both their noses were on that line and there wasn't a hair ahead of each other. It was dead heat. And, you know, I kind of just forgot about it. I didn't even think about that. It even happened anymore because the modern technology and how much you can break those hairs down in pictures. But wow.
Yeah, and in thoroughbred racing, it's even more rare because the way the horse gallops, his head goes up and down. You know, so if the horse's head's down, their body can be in the same distance from the finish line, but their head's going to be a different place. It's actually a little more common in standardbred racing when the horses aren't moving in that way.
Well, now, the interesting thing about that is Alpha was, of course, the favorite. We talked about that on Friday. By the way, neither one of us, Jamie or I, picked the winner there. So neither one of us did very well there. Yeah. So, but Alpha was the favorite at 2-1. Golden Ticket was the long shot. So now you have two winners of this race, and what happens is they both pay out separately, separate amounts, because, one, they have different odds. So what happened is Golden Ticket returned $26 to win, $26 to place, of all things, and $11.80, let me get this right. Yeah, $26.80, $26.40, and $11.80 is what it paid. Alpha paid $4, $5, and $3. So, yeah, so it was interesting to see that that didn't pan out very well for Alpha as far as the dollar amounts were concerned. I don't know what they did with the exacta. I'm not quite sure. It didn't say in the article I read how exactly they divided up the exacta and the trifecta. I don't know what happened there. But
that makes my head spin. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's too
but it was an exciting race. It was, you know, it was that close up there in New York. So it was a thrilling finish for the Travers. That is for certain. Now, the other race that happened over the weekend was the Pacific Classic. And that had its own little drama, and that was Dullahan, who we've talked about here before, and Game On Dude, who we've also talked about here before. Now, Game On Dude, if you remember right, was the favorite and was ridden by the jockey I like, Chantel Sutherland. Well, this was a $1 million race at Del Mar, and apparently things didn't go so well for Chantel. In the closing stretch, she dropped the reins.
What?
She dropped her reins, and she had no steering, basically. Apparently, it didn't matter. Apparently, at that point, Dullahan was, and I don't have the sound for this race. I probably should have dug it out. But Dullahan was closing at that point, and actually then took the win, and Game On Dude was second. But, she dropped the reins on the backstretch. She said, she quote, damn it, I haven't done that in 13 years. And she says that she doesn't think that Game On Dude even noticed the reins were dropped. And probably when you're in the back stretch, they don't. You know, they're just dead outrun at that point anyway. But, yeah, so people were, you know, of course, all the rumor and speculation was, did she throw the race and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think so. She dropped the reins. I mean, I'm assuming that happens to jockeys every once in a while.
You don't hear about it very often, though.
No, that's true.
Maybe they just don't
really
tell us.
Yeah, but I mean, riders, you drop your reins every once in a while, accidentally.
It's a little
different
in a horse race. What else are you going to do with a horse rein?
And she does say, she explained that the reins got caught on the rubber grip of her whip as she switched it from her right to left hand. So that was her explanation about how she dropped the reins there.
She's going to have to live with that one now. It's ammunition for the press.
No, it's more ammunition for the other jockeys in the jock room.
I'm sure she's going to be hearing about that pretty regularly.
She's going to have all kinds of nicknames. We could make up a few right now if we wanted to.
There's going to be a couple of spray on her locker.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of things there. They're going to be buying her reins with Velcro, and you know, there's going to be all kinds of things. Well, one of the other things that happened over the weekend was the World Endurance Championships happened over the weekend. Oops, sorry about that. I think I cut out for a minute.
You did. You're back now.
Oh, I'm back now. Sorry about that. The World Endurance Championships. Yes. Now, I wish Jamie was here. Why is she not here today? Because she's left me with announcing the winners of the World Endurance Championships. So I'll give it my best shot here. And why did the winners have to be the three riders from the United Arab Emirates? claimed gold and all three individual medals. Now, the Sheikh is very happy this week. He probably showed up for the award ceremony, unlike the World Equestrian Games, because he actually won this time. So I'll do my best here. I'll make Jamie proud by announcing the winners, and I apologize in advance to anybody listening who actually knows how to say these names. So we had the winner was Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashad Al Maktoum. Now, that one I have practiced before. On Majidi DuPont was the horse.
I think the horse names are harder than the people.
I know. Something like that was the his name. And then second place was Sheikh Rashad Dalmouk Al Maktoum. And that was silver medal on Yamama. Yamama?
Yamama. Yo, mama.
That's
I'm
what
sure
it sort of looks like.
It.
Yo, mama. Yeah. I didn't
I'm
think
sure that's
probably
how we say it.
It might be right. And then Al Kafan Al Jordi rode Bendaval. So that was the third prize. So that's who took the endurance. Now, there were 147 riders. And as usual, there was a massive thunderstorm. It seems like every endurance event we cover, there's a massive thunderstorm. And that's what happened. Apparently, 52 of the individual riders and the four top teams had already finished, and the medals had been decided. But some of the slower competitors were still out on the course and were about to start their final loop when a dramatic, powerful thunderstorm hit with massive lightning. And this is in England that this was happening. Massive lightning and torrential rain, and it caused all kinds of problems. And they actually shortened the race at that point. So
just
they
get back off the course.
Yep, they got them off the course. Apparently, lightning was really bad. So, and you know, this has happened. Remember, we had those guests on that were in Thailand for the world. The one time, Singapore,
yeah.
One of those where the lightning hit right by the American riders, like 20 feet away from the American riders, and they were knocked off their horses.
It's a hazardous sport. Who knew?
I know. Well, they have to ride in all that kind of weather. So. Hey, we have I think one of our guests is trying to get a hold of us here, Jennifer. So why don't we do this? Let's take a little break. I'm actually gonna put a song in here for a minute so we can sort out getting our first guest on the line. This is a disadvantage of only having two of us at a time, but I'm gonna put a little song in here from Shay and the Rigel Band called Vivid, and we'll be right back with our first guest. Well, that was the Rigel Band and our listener and horse girl, Shay, there on the fiddle. So thank you very much for allowing us to play their music. You can find them at rigel-band.com, or you can just search for them on iTunes. Well, we have our first guest ready here, and this involves really bad ads this coming Friday. And the reason it involves that is we're going to let you know what the prize is going to be for this week, and it is a good one. We have Brenda on the line, and good morning, Brenda.
Good morning, Glenn.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I'll tell you what happened here was Brenda contacted us a while back and said, I have these things that I think that your horse will like. You need to try them. And I said, look, Beaker is the pickiest quarter horse ever when it comes to treats. He won't eat carrots. He won't eat apples. He doesn't like most treats that you buy. He just won't like them. And Brenda said, I own the Pink Pony Bakery. First of all, I mean, how could you not listen to somebody who owns a bakery called the Pink Pony Bakery? So you sent us a whole package of goodies for our horse to try. And, well, let's just say, Brenda, the horse liked them, the dog liked them, and the cat liked them.
I love
everybody
that.
Everybody likes Pink Pony Bakery treats. And what's so cool, everybody, is the Pink Pony Bakery, it's out of Pennsylvania, right, Brenda?
That's correct.
And
Pittsburgh area.
And everything's in the shape of the stuff you'd buy at a bakery, right?
It all looks like a person could eat it, but it's definitely made for horses. And
it
horses
does look
love
like
that.
Could eat it.
There's
little cupcakes, and there's donuts, and there's cookies.
And brownies.
Like brownies,
right.
That's right. And it does look good enough to eat. Jennifer said, I'm going to try these. And she could probably try them and not die, but everything in there is natural. So
everything's natural and wholesome, wonderful ingredients, handmade. We make them every day.
Now, so why did you start Pink Pony Bakery?
Well, I first started Pink Pony Bakery when my daughter and I would travel to horse shows. We'd do the Hunters and Equitation. We traveled to horse shows, and we always wanted to treat our horse because, of course, we love our horse. And he's the one who does all the work. And so we'd travel to tack shops all across the eastern half of the country. And we never found anything that was just fun and yummy and special that we wanted to take back to the barn to feed the horse. So in secret one day, I came up with an idea. I'm going to make my own. And instead of that having be about me, I made about the Pink Pony Bakers who worked in the Pink Pony Riding Academy, and they were tired of all the dry, yucky treats that everybody was bringing them, so they snuck up into the main house in the middle of the night and made their own. Thus, Pink Pony Bakery was formed.
Well, and you sent us, you are the only cookie company I know out there, a bakery for horses that I know, that has a theme song. We got to find out about that. And
yes,
then
we
you
do.
Also had you also had the baker. His name is Pinkerton, and he's a little pink horse with a little chef's hat and everything. You had them made into stuffed animals. You went all out with this girl.
We did. And I had a lot of help from a lot of friends who just really just took love to Pink Pony Bakery. The theme song came from a rock band in Los Angeles who my son was helping them with their website. He's a young computer whiz. And they looked on his website to see the other websites he had worked on. Of course, he did mine. And they saw Pink Pony website, and they thought, wow, that's so cute. What a cute story. So they just took it upon themselves to write this theme song. They put it as their hold music for this big record label in Los Angeles. When somebody would call into the record label, they put them on hold, and they'd play the Pink Pony Bakery theme. And I had a little children's book written about the Pink Pony Bakers. I had a children's book author write a little story about the Pink Pony Bakers. I had an art student do all the drawings as her senior project for the book. So, yeah, it's just taking on a life of its own. It's a magical bakery.
Okay, now, I got to say, the rock band, I doubt, is playing this in sets on stage, are they?
I don't know.
This is not exactly a rock tune. Let's take a little listen.
Horse, of course, magic. I'll leave in the Pink Pony Bakery.
Although I do think you should be able to get it on Sesame Street.
That's a good point. We actually sing it when we bake. We actually sing it when we bake. Yes.
That's funny. It just you don't want to picture a rock band doing that, which, you know, obviously it sounds like a kid's tune, and you just don't picture a rock band standing around doing it.
I know, and that's what makes it so much fun.
Well, tell everybody what we're giving away this week for Really Bad Ads on Friday.
It's a fabulous gift basket full of all the Pink Pony Bakery treats and, of course, a Pinkerton.
Which is a little stuffed animal.
A little stuffed animal, Pinkerton. And there'll be peppermint nuggets, there'll be donuts, brownies, oatmeal cookies. The whole smorgasbord will be in that basket. And it'll be fabulous.
And I actually have a picture of what we're going to be giving away. So we're going to be posting that on our Facebook page today, so you can take a look at what the prize is. Remember to get your entries for Really Bad Ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. That's Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com, and put Really Bad Ads in the subject line. I got to tell you, I wasn't just saying that. Beaker absolutely loves these things. Now, they're huge, so we cut them up, and I don't know if you do that too, but I mean, like the cupcakes are huge, and, you know, they're just big. The donuts are big, so we have to cut them up because he would like us to feed him the whole thing, but it's a lot.
Great.
So have you found any horses that don't like them?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Absolutely, I have not. When I walk into the barn, they know I'm there because they know I'm the Pink Pony Bakery lady, and they go crazy. And everybody in the barn says, oh, Brenda's here.
Well, everybody who listens to the morning show knows about the Beast, which is our cat. And he went crazy for the box. As soon as we opened this box, he was up on the table trying to get at it, and he taste tested it. He loved it, and then he kept going after the box. I guess it smelled good, so he was trying to get into it. This is good stuff, everybody. Check it out. It's pinkponybakery.com, the only horse treat company with a theme song. You'll find them there. It is a very cute website. You have to take a look at it. And thank you so much, Brenda, for donating this week's prize, too, and for sending all the goodies over.
And thank you for everything, Glenn, and thank you, Jennifer. I really appreciate it.
Pinkponybakery.com.
Yummo.
You're going to be running out. We're going to have to buy more here because Beaker just loves those things. And he doesn't like any treat.
He's not a treat guy, you know. He usually just goes, you know. There's like one kind of treat that he'd eat. And as you said, he doesn't like carrots and apples. But he will actually take his head up out of the grass and come to the gate for a Pink Pony treat. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah, we could. He gets to go. He has a field here that we put him out because he's a bit of a fatty, and we've had to have in Lexington we had to have a muzzle on him all the time, but here we don't have to use the muzzle because we only put him out in the grass a couple hours a day. And used to be you'd go out there, he'd run away from you. I mean, he didn't want to come in. He wanted his grass. But boy, you have one of those treats in your hand, and he gallops over.
So, absolutely. And when you give him the cupcake ones that have the big mints in the middle. He makes funny faces when he eats the mints.
Because he doesn't like mints a lot either, does he?
He won't eat a mint by itself, but he likes them in the donuts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, very good. Well, that's the prize for this week. It's a big box full of stuff, too. This will last you and your horse quite a while. Yeah. It's a big box full of stuff, and it comes in a little basket, and you get the little Pinkerton stuffed animal in there as well.
Pinkerton.
You're going to want this one.
That little chef's hat.
And I'll tell you what, the ads have been really good lately. People have been sending in really terrific ads. So go to Craigslist this week, get your best ads in for Friday. And, of course, Jamie will be back on Wednesday. She's traveling home from visiting Chad's relatives in California this weekend, and she'll be back on Wednesday. We're going to take a break for our sponsor for this show, and that is Omega Alpha. And we'll be right back with our next guest to talk a little history. Omega Alpha Pharmaceuticals creates only natural health products. Their scientists, guided by Dr. Gordon Chang, formulate a wide variety of mainly herbal health products to address many equine health problems. And one of their users is international Canadian sensation event rider, Jessica Phoenix. And we have Jessica on here for a second to tell us what she thinks about Omega Alpha. Well, hi, Jess. I hear that you use Omega Alpha.
I do. I love their products. I've started using them this year, and the one product that I really love is Anti-Flam. It just takes the sting out of the horse's feet and keeps them moving comfortably. And I know that from using it in our barn, a lot of horses have benefited from it.
You can look for their products at retailers nationwide or visit their website at omegaalpha.ca. That's omegaalpha.ca. And I think Dr. Chang will be back with us here shortly in another week or two with to chat with us again. We do like talking to Dr. Chang. But if you're looking,
makes science understandable.
Yes, and he's a very smart guy. And he will be back in a couple of weeks. It's omegaalphaequine.com you can go to as well. Well, we have our next guest. Usually we have Leslie from Horse Nation that joins us every Monday. But Leslie wanted one of her writers that had written an article for Horse Nation to come on and talk about it. And it looked absolutely fascinating. Now, I intentionally have not read it because I want to learn about it on the show here today as well. But we have Lorraine Jackson on with us. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you so much for filling in for Leslie today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, although I do think that Pink Pony Treats is going to be a really hard act to follow.
Do you have your own theme song, Lorraine?
I have neither a theme song nor cookies to bribe you with. So, just
no
history.
No stuffed animals either? No, no action figures in the shape of a Lorraine Jackson?
Well, I could, you know, there might be an action figure or two that ought to come out of some of these stories. So maybe by the end of this.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I'm a University of Utah employee by day and a horse geek, you know, all the time. And I own a 12-year-old Spanish Sulfur Mustang named Posey, who I show with. And I'm also, as you said, a writer for HorseNation.com. I do most of history articles for them. I do a history column every week called Horses and History.
So what kind of horse did you say you own?
It's a Spanish Sulfur Mustang. And so she's a BLM adopted Mustang, and she came out of they have a particular herd in the Utah desert that's just pure Spanish bred Mustang. I mean, and she's got the stripes and the dark points. She's a cutie.
Did you break her yourself?
I did. Yeah, we adopted her as a weanling, and we've had her for the past 12 years.
And how, good luck all the way along?
Oh, you know, it was an amazing learning experience. I mean, they have just totally different ways of thinking than my domestic experiences. And so, like, things like circles are like containers and circles are, this is a hard concept, but she's come around and now she's a really lovely horse. I do dressage and, you know, arena ringside shows and everything with her, and she's just a ball.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Are you the only Mustang ever at the shows you're at?
Well, we compete regularly in the breed. They do like a Mustang breed show out here in the West that, you know,
okay.
They do like kind of a circuit of those that we participate in. And then we also just do open breed shows all over Utah. And she, you know, I mean, and I think in the halter classes and stuff, like, judges kind of don't know what to do with her. They're like, she's beautiful, but what is this? So that's been an experience, but she definitely looks different under saddle, but it's really fun to get, you know, people asking about her and asking about Mustangs and what they can do. And she, you know, she jumps and she does dressage and she, you know, does ring classes, and she's really proven herself to be versatile. And I'm really glad she's out there kind of promoting herself for the Mustangs.
Would you do it again?
Oh, absolutely. I probably will.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, that's terrific. That's a good story. And we're always happy to hear when a Mustang finds a good home like yours and gets a job, because they do like to work as well, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Well,
yeah,
terrific.
She's very comfortable.
Well, thank you for doing that on behalf of the horse world.
thank you.
Now, I'm a history buff. I've always been a history buff. We owned an acting company that did medieval feasts. You know,
oh.
So I'm definitely a history buff. And when you do these articles, they're fascinating. Have you always been a history nut?
You know, I have. I mean, previous to this, I worked for the Civil War Preservation Trust, and I was learning a lot about, you know, the Civil War cavalries, and, you know, there's so much equine military background that one can just kind of get lost in, and that has been a passion of mine for several years.
how the heck then did you end up doing a three-part series on horsenation.com about a Hungarian woman that rode horses?
It's, you know, it's all thanks to the powers of the World Wide Web. It's pretty fascinating. I am a regular Pinterest user, and I, of course, follow a lot of horse people who post beautiful pictures of horses. And somebody had posted a photograph of a woman, you know, a black and white photograph that looked kind of circa 1930s, 1940s, of a woman jumping side saddle in a dress, in a top hat, on this beautiful gray horse on a really, I mean, a pretty sizable fence. And the picture is so striking, and there was so little information to go with it. And I was just instantly intrigued. And I'm always kind of looking for some of those older photographs and things that might spark, you know, a historical story for Horse Nation. And as soon as I saw it, I had to know what the story was. And I thought, well, this will be great. You know, there was kind of a reference that she might have been, you know, a member of an Olympic team or an Olympic trials, but there wasn't very much information to go off of. And so I'm thinking, well, this might be, you know, a great Olympic story, a great feminist story. And it turns out that really her story is, it is an Olympic story. It is a feminist story. And it's also, I mean, a story of an individual who overcame, you know, the evils of war, not once, but twice, and has overcome so many other things in her life. And I'm so, you know, honored that I got to tell her story for Horse Nation.
What was her name?
Her name is Judith Gerke, and she was a Hungarian countess, and she was born in 1901, and grew up riding horses the way that we all do, you know, as a family out in the poppy fields, and you know, just fell in love with horses. And her particular family owned a rather large estate where they housed a particular kind of Hungarian horse called clover horses. And essentially, the legend about the clover horses is that they descend from the Asiatic steppe horses that the Mongols brought when they conquered Hungary, and that, you know, that there's all this lore that surrounds this horse, that they, you know, that the stewards of this horse, the people who oversee their care and take good care of them, will have prosperity and fortune and bring peace to, you know, the Hungarian nation. And so she, you know, she grew up amongst these legends and these stories, and you know, that was kind of her beginnings in Hungary. So as you can imagine, if she's born in 1901, she would have been, you know, right as she was hitting her adolescence, would have been the beginnings of World War I. And I mean, almost immediately as the war began, I mean, horses, you know, if you've seen War Horse, you've kind of seen some of the story where armies will pass through rural areas and they'll just take every single horse with them. And her family, the Bazi family, lost every single one of their horses to a passing army, including her childhood horse that she rode on, which was a mare named Sarga. And
I assume there wasn't a good ending like in War Horse on this one.
Well, that's the amazing thing.
Okay.
So she loses her horse, and, you know, being raised on the legend of Clover, I mean, her, you know, her she's kind of, you know, they see the horse spirit in her. They see, you know, how devastated she was to lose her horse. And her uncle, who kind of guided her through the horse experience, he was the coachman for the family, he said, it's your job now to keep the legend in the family, to find these horses again, you know, to make this a happy ending, essentially. I mean, she was charged with a rather large quest at a very young age. And as it turns out, several years after the war, she ends up, by the way, incredible things during the war. I mean, her family played a rather large political role, helping people escape out of Hungary, and she herself was tortured for information. She escaped by posing as a vaudeville girl in a traveling troupe just to get out of Hungary, and she ended up in Vienna, Austria, as a refugee. And actually, as you know, as time progressed after the war, she, you know, her family kind of came back into money, and she was living the high life in Austria, and was walking through a park one day and saw a man beating a horse, and she ran over and grabbed the crop out of his hand, and she said, you're selling me this horse and I'm taking it home. And only after she got home and she took the muzzle off did she realize that the horse under the muzzle was her very own childhood horse, Sarga.
Oh, my goodness. It did have the same ending.
It did have the same ending.
Wow.
And I, you know, and it breaks my heart because, you know, as much as it's a miraculous story and War Horse is, a miraculous narrative, there are so many people who didn't have that same fortune, you know, to rediscover their animals. And
Wait a minute. We need to stop this interview because you need to be writing the book, not an article for Horse Nation, and then the big movie and make millions.
I don't know if I'm the person to do that, but I really hope that someone makes a movie and makes millions.
Can it be us, please?
Yeah.
How did you find all this information out?
It was not easy because, I mean, her name is often misspelled. The information is so often wrong about her, and almost none of it is on the internet. And so I was able to find a couple of obscure out-of-print books that had told her story. And once I started writing it on Horse Nation, I was able to find a few people who came out of the woodwork and said, oh, I know Judith. Oh, I rode with Judith. And we started to piece some of these things together. It was really miraculous how things can come together. I'm so proud of Horse Nation and to write for them because they are the first internet website, you know, to make her story available. And otherwise it's just been absolutely impossible to find.
You really do need to get a book agent and get this one down because this is we've only told, and I don't want to tell the whole story because I want people to go read the whole thing at horsenation.com. We've only told the beginnings part of World War I. There's a whole other part that leads into World War II.
Absolutely.
So let them go read it for World War II, but, you know, you're absolutely right. She was a fascinating woman, and the parallels with the World War I part of this to War Horse are incredible.
They are. They absolutely are. And it, you know, I think it just shows. I mean, I wish that I could more adequately describe as a speaker on Horses in the Morning and as a writer exactly what a dedicated horsewoman she was and how driven she was to fulfill that mission to her family and to her country and to these horses to keep the legend alive and to keep the Clover horses going. And Judith was, I mean, to sort of spoil the ending, Judith, comes to the United States eventually, and she is one of the founding members of the Hungarian Warm Blood Society of America. And
I thought I recognized that name. We had the folks on from the Hungarian Registry, I think probably last year sometime, mm-hmm. and I thought I remembered hearing her name. And you're right, she was really influential and a key player in the Hungarian horses surviving as a breed, if it weren't for her.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was, the Army Depot was doing, was bringing some horses in from Europe, and a woman named Countess Margaret Bessenier also was bringing horses in. But really, if it had not been for Judith's horses, there wouldn't have been any crossbreeding that could have happened. They wouldn't have had the ability to breed Hungarians to Hungarians. And she went to miraculous lengths to make sure that those horses made it to the United States and that they would be able to thrive and flourish. And, I mean, I just can't imagine what the Hungarians would be like without her influence.
I think that's I think that's where the movie is in this one, is the World War II part of this.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
She, I mean, she has a very powerful relationship with a lovely mare named Egezo who, Judith herself says...
Nope, don't tell the whole story.
No. She says she would trust her with her life, and it ends up being, very much that. So
I'm really curious, as we wrap this up, Lorraine, how long did you do the research on all of this before you were able to get these articles together?
Yeah, I first discovered the photograph in probably early June, and I was looking for kind of Olympic-related stories for Horse Nation and ended up spending, the next probably, 2 months really just researching, just finding rare books, just, trying to conduct a few interviews and, find people who might have known her. And it was, it's definitely more than 100 hours of reading and research to put all of this together, but I'm so glad that it's all in one place now.
Well, and you have a couple comments. I'm reading a couple comments here on Horse Nation of the readers, and You know, one says, I'm seriously having a hard time. And once you read this story, you'll understand why this comment. I'm seriously having a hard time believing this story is true, but it's so extraordinary. I'm sure it is. You can't make this stuff up, as they say. And that's true. I mean, this is one of those stories. It really is a book and a movie waiting to be written by you. I'm trying to encourage you here.
It absolutely is. And there's actually...
I know you have a real job, but... You know,
I would love to write this story, but I know from having researched and worked with some other individuals, there's a wonderful woman who is a longtime pupil of Linda Tellington-Jones in California who's writing a book about the Hungarian horse's history, and it's actually, I think it's going to the publishers this week and is due to be out in the next several months, and should be a really good telling of Judah's story, along with Margit Bessenyei and some of the other individuals who brought the Hungarians in and some of the amazing things that they did with them. So there is a book in the works. It's just not by me, but I'm just so glad the story's getting out.
Well, you're a terrific writer, too, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, I do look forward to these on here. And, of course, as I said, because I'm partly because I'm just a history nut. But you are a good writer, and you make it compelling, and you make it very interesting for people who aren't history nuts like you and I are. You know, anybody can read these stories and really be fascinated by them.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I think that, you know, as horse geeks, I think we're all kind of happy to absorb information however it is it comes to us. So I'm glad that this is part of the Horse Nation flavor.
Well, and you know what, too? I mean, you're not making any money doing this, so to speak. So, you know, that really comes across in your passion. You're doing this really out of out of your passion to get horse history out there to the average person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an honor that I get to do this. I don't care if I'm doing it for money or not. I'm just, I
well,
feel
good,
so...
Well, that's good, by the way, because you're never... Unless you write that book.
Well, you know, the first rule of horses is, you know, you have to be able to burn a $100 bill and not cry. And then, you know, if we're used to burning through money for horses, making it.
Well, thank you so much, Lorraine. This was a terrific, terrific story. People can find it by going to Horse Nation. I'm not sure if it's on the homepage right now. Let me take a look.
I don't think it is, but it's very easy if you go to the top search box in the right-hand corner and just type in Hungarian. All three parts of the story will come up, but make sure you read all three parts.
Yeah, read it from the beginning. You have to read part one first.
Yeah.
So just type in Hungarian in the search box at horsenation.com, and you'll find it. Absolutely wonderful. We'll post links to it on our Facebook page as well, so people can find all the parts to it. Thank you, Lorraine. This is great. Well, I hope to have you back again when you write your next article.
Oh, thank you so much, Glenn and Jennifer. It was my pleasure.
Well, there you go. If you want to learn a little bit about some fascinating history about something that I've never heard about before, you'll find it in this article. It's absolutely fascinating about two world wars.
Now, this all begs the question. The War Horse was originally written as a children's book. That's where the original plot and that all came from.
Right.
It was originally a children's book.
Now,
this begs the question. The author of War Horse, was he inspired to write that children's story by this person's real life story?
Yeah, and it's interesting because the kid in that story, was it Joseph? Was his name? Was that his name? I'm trying to remember now.
Either the kid or the horse was Joe.
Yeah, I can't remember. the kid in that story obviously was poor and that kind of thing, which is the opposite of what this girl was. But as I said, I think that the interesting part of this is in World War II, Hungary was, you know, taken over by the Third Reich, and then the Russian battle involved Hungary. So there was a whole lot that went on in Hungary during that time. And I want you to read her article to get the rest of it. But it was really an interesting time in history. Thank
you
to Horse Nation.
There are fascinating horse people everywhere.
I know, and look, she has a Mustang. She saved a Mustang. You know, how many person too? We'll hope to have Lorraine back. We'll make sure that next time she writes her next article, we'll tell Leslie that we want Lorraine back. We'll dump Leslie and get Lorraine back.
There we go.
No, we love Leslie too. We appreciate her joining us every Monday. Well, let's take a little bit of a break. I have a song that will fit for everybody in Florida and along the Gulf Coast over the next day or two. It'll be ideal for that. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about photography this morning here on Horses in the Morning. But first, this. Hi, Glenn, back with you from the Horse Radio Network. I'm here with Debbie with the Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
You know, I want to ask all of our listeners, doesn't it just make you crazy when your spray bottle just doesn't work? It either leaks or it breaks and you're squishing that thing and nothing comes out and you can't get underneath your horse. Well, I have the perfect product. It's the Kelly Just Anyway Spray Bottle Nozzle. For less than $2.50, we send you this spray bottle nozzle. You can put it in any spray bottle, you know, of the normal size that you use for your fly spray and stuff. And you can go underneath the horse. It works upside down. It works.
And it doesn't leak?
It doesn't leak. And, you know, it doesn't break. These things, I am always throwing them out and getting new ones in. And these are really, really good. We use them here, and we just think they're great. It's a 9-inch little hose there, but you can cut that off if you have a shorter bottle. So, you know, it works in several other types of bottles. And for $2.50, it would make the perfect little gift for somebody at your barn that's having a birthday or, you know, for a stocking stuffer as the holidays approach. It's just, and they're in stock too. So get them while they're hot.
Well, and it doesn't leak, right?
It doesn't leak.
Because that's the worst thing. You're in there spraying, you turn the bottle over to get the bottom of the horse, and it leaks all over your hands. And then you got to wash your hands. You got fly spray all over you. It's just, you know, it's one of those things we all have to deal with as horse people that I didn't know there was a solution for. So now there's a solution for less than $2.50. You might as well buy 10 of them and replace all your bottles.
Well, that's exactly right. And you can go on our website, www.equestriancollections.com, and just search for Just Anyway Spray Bottle, and it'll come right up for you.
Terrific. Equestriancollections.com.
Thanks, Glenn.
Like a
Well, that was Marianne Kennedy, When It Rains, It Pours. And you can find all of her music at MarianneKennedy.com. And that was in dedication to everybody in Florida right now. I'm looking outside the window and it's absolutely pouring. And all of the people in the Gulf Coast, including our friend Michelle at Wright-Lee Equestrian Center in Louisiana, that's about to get dumped on. And what's eerie about this storm now, it's not nearly the magnitude, but it is taking the exact same track as Katrina and may hit the Louisiana-Mississippi area on the same day as Katrina did years ago. So that is kind of eerie when you take a look at this particular storm. It's just eerie.
Yeah. Wow. I can't imagine hanging around in New Orleans right now and just the looking out your window and saying, well, they said the last one wasn't going to be that bad either, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. I got to, which reminds me, I need to contact, since we moved down here, I haven't contacted the Red Cross about transferring my volunteership to the Florida Red Cross. Need to do that.
Get that together, dude.
I know. I need to get that done before the next hurricane hits. Well, we will, we're going to be coming up with an interview that I did a while back with Scott Trees about, and he's one of the best equine photographers there are in the world. And we're going to be hearing from him in a minute. But first, we had some news stories here that I thought we'd go over with you. And the first is the first statistics are starting to come in. Horsetalk.co.nz had these statistics that I'm starting to see now about the drought in the United States and how it's going to affect hay and feed prices.
This is going to be depressing.
It is this kind of depressing story. This is not a happy story at all. Authorities estimate that the drought across the U.S., which is centered in the Midwest Farm Belt, could ultimately cost $77 billion. Alfalfa production is on course to be the worst since 1953, with hay prices in many regions doubling. At least 62% of America's farms are in moderate or worse drought at this point, because of the record summer temperatures that we had and lack of rain, obviously. Now, this rain that's coming up will help, but a little bit too late. The U.S. corn crop is expected to be 10.8 billion bushels. It's the lowest in 17 years, which is why you've seen the prices of cereal and anything to do with grain rising. Corn prices right now are about $8.20 a bushel compared to last year at this time. It was $5 a bushel. It's approaching double what it was last year. And, you know, the price of hay has more than doubled at auctions in Iowa and Illinois. In Iowa last week, meadow hay fetched, get this, Jennifer, meadow hay, which is like our, I think it's like our Timothy, isn't it? It's just your basic
hay. It's a grass hay, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, $300 a ton. 150% higher than August of last year. Alfalfa has doubled in price over the same period, and they're expecting the alfalfa production to be down 16% over last year, which was down from the previous year, and it's the lowest level since 1953. So we're you know, it's not going to be a great year, and then certainly not going to be a terrific winter when you're trying to find hay. And that's the other problem that you have in situations like this, is finding hay, you know, especially if you have a lot of horses. We used to have that problem when we had our 20 horses. When hay was really cheap, it was still hard to find enough hay that was of good quality.
Well, the vast majority of hay production in the United States, it's not made for horses. It's made for cattle and for other, for livestock. And the parameters for edible quality hay are a little different for livestock than it is for a horse. So there's less of it, and you pay more for it. That's all there is, you know, boiled down to. You don't have this, you know, care if there's a little mold in the middle of a bale for a horse, and fewer and fewer farmers are making the small bales. They make the big round bales for livestock use. So the companies that are making the chaff and the double compressed bales that come in a plastic bag and the cubed and the pelleted hays, I think you're going to see a slow but steady rise in those types of commodities just because it's so frustrating. I mean, even here in Ocala, Florida, second horse capital of the world, even here sometimes it's you go in to buy hay at a horse feed supply store where they sell specifically horse products, And even then, sometimes you go in and you pay in top nickel for a couple bales of hay, and you get it home and go, not so nice.
Now, what did you pay this last time for hay here in Ocala?
This last time I went out, I was paying 6 1/4 a bale for what they call coastal, which is really glorified cardboard. The nutrition value is almost nil.
Yeah.
The nutrition is there.
For some reason,
our jaws
love
it. The coastal, I'm paying about 15 cents a pound for something to keep them busy. And then I have to buy Timothy separately that has actual nutrition in it. And that costs me about 35 cents a pound. So if your horse is eating 10 pounds of Timothy a day, you're paying $3.40 a hay just for hay.
What's the bale of that? Was it $20 for the Timothy?
$34 for a 100-pound bale.
There you go. Did you ever, when we had our farm in Pennsylvania all those years ago, imagine you would pay $34 for a bale of hay?
No, but in the day for locally sourced mixed, what we used to call mixed hay, which is usually a mixture of, you know, various fescues and Timothy and orchard grass that was of good quality and well cured, you were paying $5 or $6 a bale for that locally produced. Because the coastal hay we buy here is reasonably locally produced. It's produced here in the South, but the fuel prices are so high to get it here. You know, a bale that would have cost probably $5 in Georgia, 6 1/4 here just to get it here. Down in Sarasota where Dr. Wendy Ying is, she pays $3 a bale more for the exact same hay just because of the transportation costs.
Yeah, and of course gas prices aren't helping that right now either. And, you know, I counted 15 stories today when I was looking through the stories for the news today of the hay problem and the price of hay and the price of gas and everything causing more and more horses to be given up or repossessed or, you know, taken by the Humane Society. And it's becoming a big problem in Ohio right now. They're running out of places to, you know, charities and rescues to take these horses. So, and we're going to see a lot more of that as winter comes along.
Yeah, and it's not the hard grains that cause the issue for the vast majority of horse people. It's the hay.
Right. Yep. Because they have to eat a lot more of that. So, well, on a happier note, there's some donkeys that are going high tech in Israel. That's right. There's a biblical theme park in Israel that apparently you can go there, and it, you know, they have the staffs all wearing period dress, and you know they talk about the Bible and all that stuff. Well, they have donkeys, and apparently you can take donkey rides through this biblical theme park. Well, they have now outfitted the donkeys with Wi-Fi. That's right. They wear this little apparatus that makes them little Wi-Fi hotspots, so that you can take pictures and post them on Facebook immediately from on top of your donkey. So there you go.
My donkey is a Wi-Fi hotspot.
They've equipped 5 right now with wireless routers, and they plan on equipping them all here in the near future. Now, get this. So we have a biblical theme park in the country of Israel, probably out in the middle of the boonies and near Galilee, and they have their donkeys outfitted with Wi-Fi, and Disney right now is just experimenting with bringing Wi-Fi into one of the parks at Disney World. How far behind are we here in the United States? They have their donkeys outfitted with Wi-Fi, and we can't even get Wi-Fi into the park at Disney. So there you go.
Not just Wi-Fi. It's not just for Starbucks anymore.
Exactly. Also, there's a casting call going on right now. Jamie mentioned this over the on Friday, I believe, but it's happening today. If you happen to be in the area of Sunland Park Racetrack in Albuquerque, is it Albuquerque, New Mexico? I think that's down that way. It's in New Mexico. So if you're near Sunland Park Racetrack, go there from 1 to 5 p.m., and you can be at the casting call for the new movie they're making about Mind That Bird. And this movie is being made, it's going to be starting to be filmed in another month. They're doing most of the filming in New Mexico, apparently. I don't know if they're going to go up to Churchill Downs to do that part or not. It doesn't say.
You know what I find interesting about this article is the movie will be directed by Jim Wilson, Oscar-winning producer whose previous film credits include Dancing with Wolves, The Bodyguard, and Wyatt Earp. That's a pretty significant name for a little bitty film about, flash in the pan racehorse.
50-to-1 racehorse who was a gelding.
Yeah. So. I'm real curious. I discovered there's a website called IMBD, which is it's for people in the entertainment industry as a whole. It's kind of like LinkedIn for the entertainment industry. So I'm going to have to sign up for a membership so that I can keep track of how this goes, because I'm very curious who else they're going to get onto this film and what their creds are, if they've got some big Hollywood names, if they've got some people who've done other really cool horse movies, so we can kind of watch this thing pan out and grow up.
Well, they did say that there's going to be 100 crew members that will be employed, 30 actors, and 500 extras from New Mexico. So, yeah, I can honestly say that's probably one of the most exciting things that's happened down there in a while. So,
this is why, Glenn, you will never be in the movie industry. This is it right here. The project has been in the works. Well, that the project has been in the works for more than two years just to get to the point of casting it. That is just wow.
I know. That's way too long. My ADP would kick in after 2 weeks. 2 weeks would be it for me. Yeah, and no, New Mexico is a beautiful state. Absolutely beautiful. I was just picking on it a little bit. All right, next up is you found an equestrian property that's unique, too. Talk about things you would like to own. Well, this is one of them.
Oh, my goodness. There's a ranch in North Carolina near Charlotte, NASCAR capital of the world, is going to be sold without a reserve. On, what is it, September 17th?
Sure, you can get it for like $120.
Yeah, exactly. And it has not been sold in a million years. Apparently, it's very historical. And it's currently owned by a NASCAR driver, Jim Mattei.
Is
how you say that?
Yep.
Three separate residences, 517 rolling acres. Foothills is near Charlotte, September 27th, and you can go online and sign up and see the brochure. Let's see, Rocky Creek Ranch has never been on the market and has had only two owners in the past 110 years.
I think what makes this one so unique. And what was interesting is this was actually part of the old Stagecoach Road, apparently, that ran from Washington, D.C. to Atlanta, Georgia. And that road still, that path apparently still goes through this property.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the pictures online here, Jennifer. I could live in one of the four outbuildings. That would be fine. There's a nice little log one that I could take. Yeah, the garage would be good. And the barn is out of this world. I mean, it's all the fancy, fancy wood. And the tack room is incredible. I mean, it is really nice.
You saw the tack room? I didn't find that picture.
Yeah, the tack room is very, very nice. Yeah.
Nice little place. In the description on the auction company's website, it describes the equestrian facility, and it says, and there is a heated horse washing bay.
That was on our list.
You can only put brown horses in there?
Right? That was on our list of things on Friday.
Yes, that's a status symbol.
That's a status symbol. And you can have a heated horse washing bay right there. And the other thing that's a status symbol that we forgot to mention is a super duper outdoor kitchen with the massive grill. Or we did mention that one. This one has one. This one has the ultimate outdoor grill. Beautiful house, log cabin, just a beautiful place. And definitely, we'll post a link to it on our Facebook page. If you're interested, as I said, it's sure to go for about $110. You can bid it up a little bit there. Can you imagine what the taxes are?
New headquarters for Horse Radio Network.
There you go. We couldn't afford the taxes for a month, let alone a year. Well, let's hear from Scott Trees, who is one of the best equine photographers and most well known in the world. He actually does a lot of work for the Sultan of Dubai. He has gone around and actually taking pictures of the palace and is in charge of doing the official books, the official photography books of the palace of the Sultan. By the way, that project has taken him years. But he is a horse photographer and really knows what he's doing. I had an opportunity a while back to talk to him about, and the reason we were doing this today is I've been posting a picture, a Good Morning Horse World picture on our horses in the morning page every day. And I've been seeing which ones get the most response. And the ones that get the most response are the ones that have little kids and horses, little kids and ponies especially, have been getting the most response of any pictures I post every day. So this is a little thing I did with him a while back on how to take pictures of kids and horses and to make them really good so that you get the most response on Facebook with your own pictures. So here's Scott Treves. We'll be back. Well, hi, Scott, and welcome back to Horse Tip Daily.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Okay, and I hear that you're back from traveling around the world and come back just in time for summertime down there in Texas, a little hot.
Yes, a little hot, especially today.
You know, I've gotten
like
a couple
I go from one hot country to another.
Yeah, you come from the Middle East to Texas. There you go.
Right.
You could at least make a stop off like in Massachusetts where it's a little cooler.
Or somewhere, you know, or Hawaii or something.
So we have been getting some emails from people who are thoroughly enjoying these photography tips. And,
well, I'm glad to hear it.
And I think they love you to death. I think that's the other thing. And I always have fun talking to you. You wanted to talk a little bit about summertime and photography in the summer.
I did. It's summertime and horse shows and kids are home. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I think a lot of people buy a camera is to chronicle, you know, their kids and their showing or, you know, their each other. I have to say that probably some of the most horrendous photo sessions I've ever had are when husbands and wives work together for this stuff. There's one couple in one of the breeding industries that is legendary amongst us photographers for getting in enormous fights during photo sessions. But, you know, families and those kinds of things can be difficult. But it is fun to have a camera and have something that, you know, you can, today's digital world, that allows you to, you know, capture moments when your kids come out with a big smile on their face after winning a championship or just the moments that they have around their horses. And that's really what I think the beauty of digital has offered so many people, is that it's allowed the normal non-pro person to really put an excellent quality camera in their hands and have a chance to get some good results and see it instantly. So one of the things I'm going to kind of discuss a couple different venues. One is the situation when you're at home. A lot of times people want to, you know, grab that quick shot of their son or daughter with their horse and a portrait to send a friend or grandma or something like that. And one of the problems that a lot of people run into, number one, is that they'll take a picture standing about 3 or 4 feet away from horse and child, and then it comes back and they see it, and the horse's head is 8 feet long, and the kid looks, you know, 12 feet tall, and the distortion is terrible. And so one of the things you want to do when you're doing a portrait of a person and a horse, or even a person, is you want to use a mid-length focal lens or even longer. So starting at like 85, and then a lot of these zoom lenses today are like 70 to 200, and you can even go into 200 and blur out your background a little bit. But a wide lens, especially on the point-and-shoot cameras, a wider lens isn't going to work because the distortion problem is going to come along.
Okay.
So that's one thing I see a lot, and not just in portraits, but sometimes in headshots and those kinds of things when, you know, everything looks out of proportion. And that's because our brain sort of adapts in our head when you put your hand 5 inches in front of your face or at the length of your arm away, your brain basically says your hand is the same size, but a camera doesn't do that. And so, you know, I think a good average focal length is like a 135, and you can set your zoom on that focal length, or you could actually have a lens for that. But that starts compressing things up a little bit to where they look proportionally correct.
Okay.
Another situation you run into sometimes is, you know, a lot of times most people have been taught from years and years and years ago when cameras didn't have great sensitivity, and you know, you've probably heard stand with the sun behind your back so you have enough light to,
yes,
you know.
Yes. Yep.
Well, that's where that came from, really, is that in the early days of photography, they had to have a tremendous amount of light because the emulsions on the film didn't have a lot of sensitivity. Well, of course, that's all changed. And one of the problems, when you do that sun behind the back rule is, number one, you have no depth in your shot because you have no shadow, and that's what gives the two-dimensional element of a photograph a third-dimensional feel is shadow. The other problem you run into is everybody's squinting. Horse is squinting, child is squinting.
Yes, you're right.
And, you know, nobody, and you get these pictures back with faces crunched up, and even, you know, poor horses, especially those blue-eyed horses, have a problem with it. And one little trick that's real easy to do that avoids that is go and take the photograph in the shade. Most every place has somewhere that has a shade tree, and if you kind of take your horse and child just walk them into the shadow and have them walk out toward the light until they just come to the edge of that shadow where the sun starts hitting their face. Don't let it hit their face or their subject. Just step them back in a little bit. And what you're going to see with this is it's going to give a nice, even light over horse and child. Now, this is a little easier to do with a gray horse or a lighter horse than a dark horse, but the principle still works the same.
I was going to say, if the horse is black, do they get lost?
They don't really. I mean, that part, you know, if you set them against a dark, you know, like in a doorway, for example, and yes, you have to compensate a little bit for that because your exposure is going to vary. It might be end up being a little overexposed because most meters in cameras are defaulted towards trying to keep detail in the shadows. So usually what happens in something like that is the camera tends to overexpose the shot. But just speaking in averages, if you have a nice grassy background, let's say some trees, and you put the horse and child in the shadow and just to the edge of the shadow, because what will happen is that the grass or the dirt or the concrete will sort of act as a reflector and bounce a little bit of light up into that shot. And you might have to play with your exposure a little bit, which, again, is one of the beauties of digital, is that you can take a test shot. And I always encourage people to do this. Take a few test shots. Dial in your exposure. So if it's a little dark, you can lighten it up. If it's a little bright, you can darken it up. But this, you'll find, will, A, eliminate the squint problem. B, will allow you to have a real nice soft light on the shot. And, for example, there's an event I do in Albuquerque at the Arabian Youth Nationals where I photograph the kids for one of the magazines, and they have these beautiful adobe walls there, and they oftentimes I'll have them just step in the overhang where that nice warm adobe color pops up, and the, you know, it makes for a great background. And
can I ask a question? Can I follow, do a
sure.
follow-up there? So if there's no shadow available, are you, let's go back to the sun at your back, you know, sun behind you taking the picture. Was it better then to get at an angle so that
a little bit of an angle?
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Because what happens if you take a look, and a real easy thing to do is just to go outside and put your hand in front of your face where the light hits the palm of your hand, and then just start moving your hand in front of your face one direction or another and a circle, and watch how the shadow starts affecting the shape of your hand. And you'll start seeing that once you start getting just a little bit of shadow on your hand, all of a sudden your hand takes on a whole different characteristic. And the same holds true in a photograph. And so that shadow is what gives us a depth. And if you start taking a look, as a matter of fact, I'm doing a lighting, an online course for lighting here starting in September. And that's one of the things that I'll work on with people is actually trying to let people learn how to see light and what it will do with you, because light is the photographer's paintbrush.
Right.
And so you really have to learn light in order to, you know, get the most out of your images. But so a little bit of shadow, a little 45-degree angle, of course it depends on the time of the day too, but one of the things that stepping into the shadow says is it really eliminates the problem. It doesn't stop the direction of light. You're still going to have, if you take a look and even do this situation with your hand in a shadow, you're going to see that there's still a brightness and a darkness depending on where you stand, but it's a much softer look. And it's just a trick a lot of us do with the pros that to eliminate the squinting problem for number one, and number two, it really makes for a very nice sight.
That's a great tip, and you know, that's something that unless you're told or find it by complete accident, you don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, you know, I always tell people, you know, experiment. So, you know, again, the beauty of digital is that you can shoot to your heart's content and adjust your exposure so easily and so quickly to really get it right. And in the course of that, you might learn that, like I said, oftentimes if you have a dark horse in a dark doorway, what your automatic exposure tends to do is too much light in the shot and makes it too bright, and you actually, surprisingly, most people are surprised that you actually have to tell the camera to shoot a little darker by going a stop or so down. But the other thing that is, how do you pose these kids? I mean, one of the problems is, you know, we call them gripping grins. When they, you know, they come out of the rail and you know, stand next to your horse and hold him and smile. But one of the problems that I see a lot of times is when people try and take their own pictures is they have the horse or the child standing too far back from the horse. So they're, you know, you want to shoot rather into the side of the horse, kind of turn the horse three-quarter front, and have your child stand next to shoulder if they're leading them. And that makes for a much nicer, smoother composition. Also, if you're better off to have your child turn at a little bit of an angle, the tendency for everybody is to turn straight into the camera, and that's not very flattering on anybody. So turn a little bit sideways. If they come out of the ring on horseback, again, rather than shooting from the side, shoot from a little three-quarter front. Like, take the front of the horse's chest and take one giant step right or left, which actually lets you shoot a little bit into the point of the horse's shoulder. And that will give you a nice angle. The horse can turn his head a little bit toward you, and child can smile, and it makes for a very nice shot. And the other thing is that people, A, because they said they shoot too wide, or B, they get too far back. So you've got the horse and the building and the parking lot, and you know, in there somewhere is a shot of the child. And so, you know, frame your shot, you know, to where you can, you know, have them throw up the shot, or don't be afraid to move in and like chop them off at the chest. You know, shoot that horse from the chest up. And these are things that make for much nicer pictures. Now that's more along the pose side of things, though. I mean, these are situations, like I said, when they, you know, it's the impromptu minutes, moments with horses and kids that I think are wonderful. And this is the thing that I always encourage people to do. It's like, get away, you know, I hate what I call the Kmart smile that all these kids have. You know, it's like you've been so ingrained to smile, and they get this very false smile on them.
When you look at the even model pictures, you can tell the ones that are generally having a good time in the shoot and the ones who are faking the smile.
Exactly. I mean, it's the body language, it's the way the face looks. And the biggest thing is, a lot of times I'll tell the kids I'm not really photographing what I actually am. And it's those unguarded moments, especially the parents. I mean, it's going to be all mom, all dad, you know. I mean, there's going to be that whole interaction going on that there are also many kids, as I said, are conditioned to put on this, you know, this false smile. So I basically let kids walk around with their horses and, you know, take pictures of them when they're washing their horses or, you know, walk in a field and let them eat some grass. And, you know, horses don't always have to be standing with their heads up and their ears pricked up. I mean, There's those moments. I have a wonderful shot of my granddaughter that when she was, she was probably 2 years old, and we were inside a stall, but this horse loved snacks, and Taylor was holding this bag of snacks in her hand, and the horse leaned down to look at the snack, and Taylor just leaned her head against his nose. And, you know, there was a moment. And those are the kinds of things that you have to condition yourself to look for, but those are the kinds of shots that I think most families really enjoys, those unguarded captured moments. So again, keep your camera handy. Be alert that it's not just the posy stuff, but it's also the non-pose moments that can give you those shots that you want to put in your album or hang on your wall.
Okay, great. And well, that was Scott Trees, one of the best equine photographers and photographers in general out there today. He did a whole series of tips for us over at Horse Tip Daily. You can go to horsetipdaily.com and just put in Scott Trees, just like T-R-E-E-S, and you'll find his tips over there. His website also, which is amazing, he has some of his shots up there, and he does have some prints for sale as well. It's Trees Media, T-R-E-E-S, media.com. Some amazing shots. We met him, actually, Jennifer, if you remember right, we met him, we went to a gallery showing at the Kentucky Horse Park of his work. And then we contacted him after that because we were so impressed.
Yes, and he was very gracious. Oh, sure, I'll come on to the Horse Radio Network. He was. They put put that in right before the grand opening of the Arabian Horse Exhibit there at the Horse Park Museum, which is really pretty cool. And he's such a nice guy. He's so helpful and he's very giving with his time and his knowledge.
Yeah, and he loves what he's doing. You know, he just loves what he does for a living and just has a terrific time doing it. So you can find, again, more about him at treesmedia.com, and you can find all of his tips over at horsetipdaily.com. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for today. We're going to be back on Wednesday live here. Jamie should be back on Wednesday from her trip to California. And, you know, we're going to have a lot of things to do this week. We have a show for you tomorrow that I think you'll enjoy. And it looks like the rains have descended upon us here in Ocala from the tropical storm. We wish everybody luck over up on the Gulf Coast. Let's hope it doesn't get too bad and that you're all okay up there. Remember to batten down the hatches. And don't forget, get your really bad ads in, jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. That's it for this week, or today. Jennifer, thank you so much for being here.
See you tomorrow. Send us your snarky ads, your funny ads, your poorly written ads. We want them all.
Stay neuter and geld, as Jamie would say. Early and often. Well, maybe not often.
Maybe not.